Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. This is The Next Issue, and my name is Mike. I'm one of your hosts. For today's episode, I had the pleasure to sit down and chat with Henry Flint and Arthur Wyatt. These fine gentlemen have a new story coming out in this week's Judge Dredd magazine. That's issue number 340, and it's called Dredd Underbelly. This is a sequel to the Dredd movie that came out last year, and it is awesome. If you've seen the movie, this is just going to expand that universe for you. If you have not seen the movie, don't fret. Arthur really took the time to flesh out these characters, give you proper introductions to Dredd and Anderson in just a really smart and concise way. You know, you really, in 10 pages, you're plunked down in the middle of a ton of action, and you are given what you need to know about each of these characters. I mean, it's really awesome. The story looks great. Henry did a bang-up job on art, along with Chris Blythe, who did colors, and Ellie DeVille, who did letters. This is just a great, great story and part of a great magazine. If you're unfamiliar with Judge Dredd magazine, it's a monthly magazine format anthology, over 100 pages of story, fleshing out the various characters in Judge Dredd. There's some creator-owned stuff in there. I mean, it's just great high-minded comics. If you're not reading, I implore you to do so. Judge Dredd magazine is available at finer comic shops everywhere, as well as digitally from 2000adonline.com or the Apple newsstand magazine app that they have. They have subscriptions available. Awesome stuff. And if you are unfamiliar with the world of 2000 AD and Judge Dredd, fear not. This Wednesday, we'll be launching Multiverse City 1, which is our look at Mega City 1, Judge Dredd, and all things 2000 AD. It'll be a weekly article covering the weekly 2000 AD magazine, and I am super excited for it. We have some really cool things in the hopper. I think it's going to be a really good time. So sit back, relax, enjoy this interview, and as always, find us on MultiversityComics.com. Not only can you find all of the Next Issues episodes there, but starting this Wednesday, you'll also be able to find Multiverse City 1. So enjoy the show. Henry Flint, Arthur Wyatt, gentlemen, thank you for joining me on the show today. How is everybody?
Pretty good.
Yeah, very good. Thank you.
And we're spanning multiple continents, multiple time zones. I'm glad everybody can make it. This Wednesday, in Judge Dredd magazine number 340, you guys have a brand new story starting, the sequel to last year's Dredd movie, and it's called Underbelly. So can you talk a little bit about the story and a little bit of how you came to be involved with it and where it came from?
Okay, so, I was actually just sort of finishing up on another story set in the Judge Dredd world when Matt Smith, the editor of the magazine, contacted me and said, would you be interested in writing a comic book sequel to the Dredd movie? And I pretty much wrote this little mini essay on how yes, I'd love to do that. That would be amazing. It could be like the start of this new thing. And it could be like the ultimate version of the Judge Dredd universe. And it's kind of continued on and on with that. So that was a yes to that. And he wrote back and said, okay, send an outline. And yeah, that's how we got rolling on that.
And then,
In terms of the content, I guess it's like about a year on from where the movie is. Kind of starts with Dredd kind of getting involved in another case where at this time he's meeting up with Anderson again and she's a little bit more established. She takes kind of a background role, but she's sort of important to it. And it's a little broader than the movie where you were kind of pretty much constrained to one tower block.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that Anderson makes an appearance in this one. I think it's fantastic. I mean, she's not in it for very long, but she needs to be seen, I think. She had an absence in the... did she have an absence in... Which one am I thinking of?
Was she in the preview that you did with Matt?
That's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah, she wasn't in that one. So, that would be, something extra to have her in it. I mean, she plays a good role in this one, doesn't she? She sort of links in. Well, I don't want to give any of the story away to people.
I definitely say she's like a little bit more established, and it's almost like her case that Dredd comes in on rather than the other way around.
Mm. You definitely get that feeling that she is more established and more confident in her role, especially when her and Dredd first interact for the first time, and she just goes straight into basically giving him sass, you know?
Allison always gives him sass.
I know. But that's something that you didn't really, that's part of their relationship that you didn't really see in the movie, because she is, she's about as green as you can get.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, that was the end of my thought.
the movie is almost like her origin story. Mm-hmm. I think they did something very clever focusing on her so much in the movie, because it's kind of hard to do an arc as such with Dredd, because he's kind of immobile. He shifts only by tiny fractions. And across the movie, he's kind of shifted from being grim and disapproving to being moderately less grim and disapproving. I think they did a smart thing, having her there and having the movie. It's as much about her as it is about him.
Yeah, you see the world through her lens.
Just a flat out great character anyway.
Oh, absolutely!
It's great seeing her on screen.
She's. It's always a treat whenever she shows up. I just got the. I guess it was the Batman Judge Dredd hardcover that came out a few months ago. And I had forgotten how basic, like, it's called Batman Judge Dredd, but Anderson takes center stage in all of those stories. It's sort of the same storytelling tool. You know, you're introduced to these two unmoving characters through the lens of Anderson. You know, Anderson becomes the relatable in these pages. I want to hop back to something that was mentioned earlier in terms of the stories based from the movie being considered sort of like the ultimate Judge Dredd universe. Can you talk a little bit about some of the storytelling some of the avenues that you can explore in the, I guess we'll call it the movie universe as compared to writing a more canon Dredd story?
It's not quite as much of an all-in sci-fi sandbox as the comic book Dredd is. The comic book Dredd, you have robots, you have aliens, you have everything piled all in. And I think most of those elements kind of turned up within a year of Dredd starting. So it's all been there pretty much from the start that this is a sort of far future city with every considerable sci-fi trope running in it. The movie, they very cleverly sort of pared that down to what was very manageable, and I think we've kind of stuck within that. We expand things out a little. We don't, as I say, like get stuck inside one block. We explore outside of that in the city, and we get out into the cluster a tiny bit. But in terms of do we put in like all of a sudden aliens arriving? We've kind of stayed away from that and kept that whole kind of street level vibe. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to ask in terms of the world. How far out have you planned? Or I guess, first of all, how many chapters is this story planned to run? And then are you just sort of containing your thinking to these chapters that you're working on now? Or are you just kind of going wild in your minds about it, like in terms of what can be in the future?
So this is a three-parter. I haven't really looked at it beyond the three-parter. I think it would probably be the various companies involved making a call on that. I would love to do more, though. As I say, I've definitely got a vision of how this could be like, you know, Ultimate Dread. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure Dread really needs an Ultimate Dread, but it could be fun to do.
Yeah, you get to sort of explore things that have already been looked at and well established, and kind of give them a fresh, you know, like a fresh view on things. Something that I was curious about in reading this first chapter, you know, I'm glad in the movie that they took a more realistic approach to the judges' uniforms. You know, took the familiar elements that everyone's been reading for years and sort of translated them in a way that looks believable. But in looking at these pages, I became curious about the opposite of that. So you're taking something that was, you know, translated from the giant golden shoulder pads and everything that we know as judges' uniforms and turned into a sleeker, more practical look. I'm curious, Henry, in terms of translating that back to the comics page.
Well, it's interesting. I do like the new style of the Dread uniform, because it's kind of based on an actual riot gear, you know, in the modern age. So you get the feeling that it could actually be put into practical use, and these judges could go out and dispense their law and order in a kind of like a practical way, you know, with I think there's a kind of like a riot gear that I think it's either in, is it Spain or Italy? I think it could be Italy. Yeah, Italy's riot gear is quite fascist looking. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how PC it is of me to say that, but like, they're all dressed in black leather padding, and the helmets are black helmets with sort of black visors, and everything's extremely oppressive without putting any sort of connotations onto fascism and all that. It's kind of like you get the idea. If you see these people dressed in this type of leather gear, you just want to run away, you know.
Yeah, they're terrifying looking.
Yeah, terrifying. Yeah, and it's part of the look to actually be terrifying, to disrupt the rioters in a way and sort of put a bit of fear into them. And the fact that they all unify as one, they all look identical as well. They've got this sort of strength in numbers and recognizability in the collective looking, you know, sort of thing that attacks the writers. I mean, it's quite something, really. But well, you know, whether that's right or wrong, you know,
there's a couple of vehicles in there as well, isn't there?
There's a couple of what, sorry?
Vehicles.
Yeah, I think you've got some sort of Land Rover-y type vehicle that looks pretty, it's very sort of real-world riot gear looking.
Yeah, definitely it definitely is all very real-world looking, but it's still, you still get sort of that fantastical comic book, comic book language out of it. And I think it seemed to me to be a very interesting balance to maintain, and I think you did it exceptionally well. Now, in terms of working from the movie designs and everything, were you given model sheets, or are you given sort of liberties to just sort of watch the movie and interpret it in your way and kind of incorporate some of these more real-world things that you've been looking at and that inspire you with this stuff?
Well, when I was doing Matt Smith's script, I was given about five or six screenshots of the uniform and the city and the motorbike, and that's all I had to work on for the 10 pages. So it was kind of a difficult job, really, and there wasn't even a shot of what the judges look like from behind. So there's this kind of like a crustacean creature, like trilobite thing that's on the back of the judges, and they kind of like. But I didn't see that. There wasn't a photograph with that picture on the back. So with script, Arthur, the idea that I just had the whole movie. I bought it from the shop and put it on, and was taking film grabs and thinking, ah, that's what it looks like there, that angle, and everything just became clear. So I had a lot better understanding of the Dread world. And. And it's like trying to.
Could you start again from trying to? You dropped out for a second.
Me.
Mm-hmm.
Have I dropped out?
Oh yeah, just for a second. You were getting. You said that something is like trying to, and then you dropped.
I can't remember what I was talking about now, but
it was about the back armor, and then watching the movie, and then
I think it was just about watching the movie and not being able to interpret the movie as well as you could have, because basically you haven't seen the movie, so and you're working from just a couple of screen grabs, but. You know, hopefully this one that I'm doing with Arthur will be a lot better, simply because I've seen the movie now, and I've been able to take as many screen grabs as I can and interpret it, you know, a lot better. The idea of doing a story where you don't know what's happening and you don't know what the people look like and things like that, you kind of cut a lot of corners and you do a lot of close-ups, and you can't draw someone's back, so you don't draw someone's back, so you draw everyone... front, and you try and manipulate the story until that you can draw the things that you know what they look like, you know, in a way. But the freedom on this one is a lot more pleasing, I think, in the drawing way. You know, so
I want to mention you've made a couple references to the Matt Smith story you did. That's the Mama origin, right?
Mm, yeah.
Okay. And that's for listeners. That's available for free download through the 2000 AD newsstand app.
So that's right. Yeah,
quick aside on that.
It was done the promotion for the film. It came out as both free online. And I went to an animation as well to watch, and also it was free to download and. By in the magazine as well, just a month before the release of the movie.
Now, with you guys working in this movie universe, what's editorial oversight like? Are you guys just given free rein to do what you see fit, or what's that like?
So, I got the sort of general brief from Matt, and the first thing I pretty much did. That was download the script by Alice Yarland and read that. And it's actually rather handy on Amazon, which makes it really easy for me. So I read through that, and it is a really nice, really tight script. And you can kind of see the style of the movie in it, even without the movie right there in front of you, because it's just sort of so terse and clipped, and every line in it has this sort of purpose. So I wanted to follow on from that. So that was definitely a goal I had there. The first outline I sent over to Matt was a little more constrained, almost sort of following the whole kind of pressure cooker thing of the one block in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Matt actually sent back he liked it, but basically wanted me to open it up and have more of the city, because, you know, we are not constrained in quite the same way, to just the same corner by budget or anything. So that, I think, that was all pretty much me and Matt. I do not know to what extent Matt is talking to the movie guys. I'm pretty much just talking to Matt.
So from your experience, is it basically no different than working on any of the other 2000 AD stories you've done before?
It's kind of easier in a way than regular Dreadworld, because regular Dreadworld, there's 35 years worth of stories. And this one is pretty much one movie. So you're able to just kind of focus down on what makes this one movie special.
Mm-hmm.
And you can kind of pull from the rest a little. I suspect the movie is going to be kind of informing people's style on how they write Dreadworld Dread stories as well a little. But anyway, yeah, it all becomes that sort of grokking the style of this one movie and trying to replicate it, which is this sort of very, it's almost like a sort of 80s action movie style.
Okay.
There's definitely an element to it that it's not quite retro, but it's kind of a throwback to action movies being action movies, and you know, this whole kind of I'd say its ancestors would be things like RoboCop and other things that tend to be around about the 80s, rather than you know this sort of modern high CGI. Probably aimed at 13-year-old kind of slot.
When you guys first started breaking this story, you know, what kind of consideration was given to who your readership would be? Did you kind of come into this considering that most people who read it have seen the movie, or because I feel like there are definitely some solid in character introduction beats. So kind of what was the thinking in terms of that?
I think every story has to do that a little. I'm not a fan of stories that don't stand on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things in comics at the moment is that the art of sort of making these sort of one-issue, self-contained standalone seems to have been sort of left aside a little because everyone's aiming at trades. But, I kind of like to have that in what I'm doing. And I think that's kind of a 2000 AD thing as well. And 2000 AD introduces new stories pretty regularly. It's an anthology, so every issue is potentially a new story starting and a new reader starting, so it kind of has to reflect that a little.
Yeah, I think that this first chapter definitely does that. Like, you get, for anyone who hadn't seen the movie, or even anyone who isn't familiar with Dread, you get solid introductions with Anderson and Dread, but at the same time, you're being plunked into the middle of a lot of action. So, you know, again, another delicate balance that I think was struck exceptionally well in this first chapter. And it was, what, 15 pages?
10.
10 pages? Wow. You guys packed a lot of story in there.
Yeah. In terms of panel count, 2000 AD tends to be a little denser than U.S. comics because it's an A4 size. I guess it's like a third again on top of what you get on a U.S. comics page. So 2000 AD tends to be a little denser, and 10 pages of 2000 AD is possibly more like 20 pages of U.S. comics.
So what does that make the writing approach like, and the art approach, you know, when you're thinking about working at 2000 AD and then coming over and doing some American comics? Like, what is there much of a difference in terms of mindset when you approach the two?
I haven't really worked on U.S. comics much. To me, the thing that strikes me is as I've been working, I've been working on larger and larger things. The sort of entry level of 2000 AD is the Future Shock, which is a five-page self-contained story with mm-hmm. a twist. So you have to go fall in with an entire world for five pages. And I think Henry did one for the magazine. So it's a self-contained world. It sets itself up, and it resolves with a twist ending all within five pages. And it's actually pretty hard to pull off, but it's like this fantastic laboratory for doing very dense, what Andy Diggle called rocket fuel fiction.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry.
Every inch of it is, packed with power and explosion.
Yeah, they've been running them in the 2000 AD magazine, and a couple of months ago there was a story by Will Morris, and that kid just blew me away. I think he's a great cartoonist. And yeah, those are, I think Rocket Fuel Comics is a good explanation of it, because it is so dense, and it is almost like a trial by fire, you know, like in five pages, like it's either going to work or it doesn't.
Yeah,
but,
so it can come from the... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add, actually, for the people who don't know what Future Shocks, who haven't read them before, I mean, you've got to think in terms of Ray Bradbury and Arthur C. Clarke and their short stories. And I think there was a short story that Ray Bradbury did of going back in time, seeing the dinosaurs and stepping on a butterfly and then coming back to the future, where there were bits missing, like E's were spelled backwards and the different scent in the air, the different president and things like this. That's with the twist at the end. To fit that into five pages, as you say, you know, is quite something.
What's the one you did, a five-pager?
There was a five-pager in this month's magazine, I think. I didn't write that one. It was Ben Smith, I think. No, not Ben Smith. Who was it?
That's a pretty neat one. I won't spoil it, but I like that one.
Yeah, well, lots of scientific twists, loads of things happening where, and usually it ends with someone dying horribly.
Yeah, horrible death is a 2000 AD constant.
Absolutely.
Trademark. Hilarious. Well,
the kids.
Yeah. Hey, kids comics. So, Dread Underbelly, part one, is in this Wednesday's magazine. That's issue number 340. It's going to be available in finer comic book shops everywhere, as well as online from 2000adonline.com and their newsstand app, and I'm sure Android and all those other things. Henry, Arthur, I want to thank you guys for taking the time to talk today.
Oh, thank you, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.